The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Has a long history of individual and teams pushing the rules to their very limits, sometimes leading to new innovation and even new versions of a sport. But what about those who do away with the rules and the limitations altogether, deciding that nature and physics are the only true referees? Well, that was the approach of the Dangerous Sports Club, and here to tell us more is Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
The Dangerous Sports Club, founded where?
In San Moritz in 1977. So David Kirk and Ed Hulton go to the famous Swiss resort to take on the legendary Crestor Run, where the sports of intramural sledding and skeleton were invented. But they were disappointed. They had been long disappointed with the strict regulations and high costs of sport that they felt hamstrung them so that they were no longer full or fun. And the Crestor Run experience was the straw that broke the camel's back. So they go and they meet Chris Baker, who's this hang gliding enthusiast. And Kirk's father had been an alpinist. So an alpinist is a mountain climber who specializes in dangerous, steep ascents. He trained on the roofs and spires of Cambridge. So there was definitely precedent here. And the three of them set up the Oxford Dangerous Sports Club as a result.
Okay, so what were the rules, or were there any rules?
Well, their mission was simple: to seek liberation through confronting fears and bureaucracy, and to create affordable adventures for daredevils like themselves. Bureaucracy is their big enemy. They want to eradicate the sort of rules and strict regulations that traditional sport would have. So formal dress, like any Oxford club, was mandatory when attending club engagements. And hang gliding was...
So there was a rule anyway.
There was one rule, yeah, come on.
A dress code.
We're not animals, it's not Vietnam. And hang gliding was the most common activity, but other early stunts ranged from shopping cart races down steep streets to launching themselves off ski jumps on makeshift sleds. Basically anything that was going to annoy bureaucrats, in Baker's words.
So they're going to do silly and dangerous things that would be fun.
Exactly.
Now, the world's first bungee jump, I mean, this is recorded as fact, is it?
So in late March 1979, invitations were sent out to DSC members. April Fool's Day 1979, Clifton Suspension Bridge, Bristol, bungee jumping at dawn, morning dress.
So now, we think of a bungee, obviously, as the thing that you attach to yourself when you jump off a bridge or whatever. And there are commercial attractions that offer that today, which is many years on. But a bungee was something that people might have had to keep their books on the back of their bike in Oxford.
Yeah, exactly. Or even skis as well on top of the roofs of cars. And that's where Baker reputes that he got the idea, having seen the elasticity of them. Now, Kirk had seen this TV documentary about land diving in Vanuatu, which probably merits a slot on its own at some point. It's a ritual where men tie woody vines or lianas around their ankles and jump from a wooden tower 20 to 30 metres high, hoping to go back up or to bounce. So it is disputed who came up with the concept. Kirk reckons it was a group idea, but I digress. But the key thing is Baker lived near Bristol, so lived near the Clifton Suspension Bridge, with links Bristol and Clifton standing at 75 metres over the River Avon. They said this is the perfect place to go. Alan Weston was a member of the DSC at the time. He later goes on to become a rocket scientist with NASA. And they'd worked out that the false extension curve of the elastic ropes they were using were suitable in theory. They wanted to test it in practice, but Kirk said, what would be the fun in that? That wouldn't have been the first jump. So I'm going to test it on the day.
So April the 1st, 1979, I mean, invitations went out. Did the authorities get word?
Yes. So Kirk and his band of merry men were often the scourge of wives, girlfriends and anyone else who cared for their loved ones and didn't want them partaking in these suicidal attempts. So two sisters of Weston tipped off the police about the stunt, and they'd been staking out the bridge since dawn, but then gave up because it seemed like it wasn't going ahead. The lads themselves had partied all night in Baker's apartment, trashed the place and were a little worse for wear turning up. But they had a window of opportunity. So Kirk puts on a top hat, swings his legs over the parapet, grabs an open bottle of champagne and jumps.
And jumps, attached to a bungee.
Yeah, he lets the bottle flies off, he loses his hat, but he does bounce up and down. And three of his clubmates then decide, oh, it's safe, we'll go and do it too. They were then pulled back up and arrested by policemen standing by. They didn't quite get the dressing down they were expecting, according to Kirk and ITV.
They were very good human about it, and they bundled us off to prison. I could say quite honestly, I didn't take drugs, just red wine as a local anaesthetic. And they were very nice, very good humoured. They're the only police force I've ever known to bring half-empty bottles of red wine from the party in a brown paper bag and give it to us in prison. So that was the spirit of Bristol, in my romantic opinion.
And that's David Kirk there. So did they behave after that?
No. Bungee jumping, the cat had been out of the bag at this point. They wanted to spread the gospel of it, and they went to the Golden Gate Bridge, performed it again, and the Royal Gorge Suspension Bridge in Colorado. New Zealander AJ Hackett then takes up the mantle. He develops the sport from 1988, and then New Zealand becomes the official home of bungee jumping, which it is today. And Kirk himself bungee jumped from the same bridge, the Clifton Suspension Bridge, in 2000 to mark the sport's 21st anniversary.
Now, did the Dangerous Sports Club in Oxford prosper?
Did. It got more and more popular. Lots of members from across the class spectrum, so not just upperclassmen, but also people from middle and working class. Nigella Lawson was a member at one point, and there's a great photo of her at a DSC tea party playing croquet while being carried by four members in a litter. It's so, so bizarre. It's something out of a Fellini film. And one admirer of the DSC, unsurprisingly, was Monty Python's Graham Chapman. He came and participated in a few
club activities
as well.
Must have inspired a lot of Python-esque sketches, I'd imagine.
It's probably chicken and egg. Which one inspired which?
Now, one member in 1983, Hugo S. Powers, suggested something very challenging.
A bike race down the Matterhorn, which is what they basically led to, the real ski races that they brought on then, ranging from an ironing board, baby carriage, a tandem bicycle, a grand piano with two people sitting on the bench, a Louis the 14th dining set, and a full crew boat seating eight people. When Bowers tries to rent the boat from the Oxford University Boat Club, he puts down £25 for it and a £75 deposit, because he reckons the guy knew he wasn't getting the boat back.
Mm. Now, they didn't stop there. It wasn't just the alpinist activities. They did other things.
Yeah, so Kirk flew across the channel tied to a kangaroo-shaped cluster of helium balloons, which resulted in him being prosecuted, get this, for flying without a pilot's license. And a subsequent editorial in the Times said, there can be few people who already know before this business that it is an offence in this country to fly a kangaroo without having first been licensed to do so. Well, they know better now. And actually, Kirk's final stunt, I'd love to get, if there's people out there who know more about this, if they could get in touch, because he struck a deal with this Japanese TV company, which had him doing loads of different stunts, one of which was to launch himself into the Atlantic from the cliffs of Moher using an aircraft launcher, specifically one used to launch military drones. They'd ordered this seat that was going to protect him from the G-force, but it didn't arrive on time. Kirk goes ahead and does it anyway, and he breaks his spine in three places as a result. I couldn't find any local media on this, so if there's anyone out there...
So this actually happened at the Cliffs of Moher?
Yeah, and basically ends his career. So if there's anyone out there who knows more about this, do get in touch.
And now his exploits began to catch up with him financially.
And he'd used a lot of other people's expense accounts, his own inheritance. One incident involved borrowing an Amex card, and he was charged with fraud and served 4.5 months of a 9-month sentence. He'd fell out with a lot of people. He was kind of an eccentric, but... he lived a long and full life and dies in October 26, 2023, age 78, in the comfort of his own bed in Oxford, ironically enough.
Extraordinary. I mean, you called him a kind of eccentric. Kind of, indeed. Cameron Hill from Off the Ball, thank you very much for joining us. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.